Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Rado Palamariu, Managing Director of Elcut Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And it's my pleasure to have with us today Mark Dragon, Managing Director of ReefKnot Ventures. ReefKnot Ventures is a joint partnership between Temasek, which is Singapore's state-owned fund, and the global logistics company Kuehne+Nagel. The firm is based in Singapore, but is looking for companies around the world that are raising their Series A or B rounds with a focus on high-growth technology companies pushing new frontiers within the supply chain and logistics space. Mark has more than 20 years in the ICT and management consulting industry in Asia, mostly focused on the areas of analytics, IT, and supply chain solutions. He started his career in Deloitte and IBM for many years and then transitioned in several roles in venture capital, entrepreneurial setups, and he's also very actively involved in the startup community in ASEAN and Asia in general, being a mentor and advisor to different startups. He took over ReefKnot about a year ago with a vision to build a global ecosystem of high-value partners who will bring added support to help accelerate startups in tech, logistics, and supply chain. Mark, thanks for making the time. A pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks, Radu, and thank you for having me in this podcast.
And maybe let's start by asking you to tell us a bit about yourself. What drove you in your career to switch from doing consulting to being very actively involved in VC and startup world?
Yeah, thanks. And also thanks for the introduction about 20 plus years in industry, right? And starting about
Sorry
IBM.
To make you sound old.
No, that's not that old compared to the whole industry. Well, when I first started out in IBM in technology, you know, these are the big MNCs, right? So started on a very big MNC perspective, and even in Deloitte as well, you know, I was consulting for clients across the region as well. And as I looked out into the space, I found that there were a lot of, even about 10 years ago, right, there were startups that were starting to challenge the norm, you know, in the supply chain, logistics, and technology industry. And this was way back 10 years ago, before the term big data was actually came out. So I sort of sensed that kind of, that change. And I felt that I wanted to do something impactful other than being in a large company and running a business unit within a large organization. And that's why I came out to do my startups, right? And it's only when you do your own startup, then you realize the pain and the difficulty that a startup would face, right? Everything from, you know, fundraising, cash flow, hiring folks, getting projects, you know, delivering projects and stuff like that. So it was a interesting yet painful process, right? For the first couple of years when I did my startup, my first startup in the big data space. When I did my second one, we applied a lot of learnings, co-founded this analytics startup, you know, and we grew it quite large, and it was acquired, a majority acquired by Goldman, right? After that, after doing that whole big multinational thing, and doing that startup from scratch to a certain size, there was a gap that I felt that I had that I wanted to, you know, scratch, which was really bringing a company to IPO, right? So, and therefore, you know, I had the opportunity to lead, you know, an Asia Pacific supply chain technology firm as a CEO for a few years. And subsequently, when this opportunity came out, you know, to really be much more involved in a global startup space, you know, I jumped on it, right? So long story short, you know, why the switch from a large company into this VC space? You know, it's really, I saw the impact early on of new business models and technologies, right? And I really wanted to be, you know, a key player to help the transformation of the industry. Initially, in the small little space that I was in ASEAN and Asia Pacific, and now I have the opportunity to do it globally.
Mm-hmm. And ReefKnot is a fairly unique setup because it's a partnership between a state-owned fund, which is Temasek, and a private logistics company, which is Kuehne+Nagel, one of the largest in the world. How did that happen? How did this partnership came about?
Well, firstly, Temasek, with more than 200 billion worth of AUM, it's an investment firm, it's an investment fund by itself, right? So they're driven by their own, measurements, right? And KN being squarely in the supply chain logistics, a key leader of this globally, right? The whole industry is basically looking at transformations in the industry. They're looking at business models that's coming out, right? They're looking at new technologies. How can it be applied, right? And I think it's just, I can't talk about how they got together, but ultimately the fund itself, is really looking at early stage business models and technologies, right, that would transform the industry, right? And I think as part of this roadmap, and just bearing in mind, we are not a CVC, right? We are a pure venture capital firm. We're driven primarily by returns, right? But the other key metrics that we look at is really, the ability to support startups that transform the industry. And that's very, very key, right? It needs to be transformative. It needs to be differentiated, right? If a startup comes up, it potentially is great returns, but it is similar to a lot of the others out there, we are likely going to pass that, right? Also, another thing I want to bring up around, why the industry, and how we are looking at it, right? So, the supply chain logistics industry is really facing multi-pronged pressures, right? That's creating huge opportunities for new business models and technologies, right? And it's not only a case where startups come up, disrupt the industry and, kill the incumbents or traditional folks. It's not that case, right? It is a case where, and now we're starting to see it, right? Where is there really value at that's created with these business models and these technologies? Or is it, and this value add, is it an incremental value add, productivity improvement, operational improvement? Or is it really changing fundamentally how the industry works in some certain areas, right? And I think that is really what we are focused on, right? And to be very clear about, investment thesis in those specific areas. Is it purely for operational improvements and productivity gains, right? And if so, is incremental improvements? Or is it more a case of really transformative and things are happening that hasn't happened before and the opportunities are there? So I think, with us focused on this place, the hope is that we can help our ecosystem partners and especially our LPs, right, to identify more of these very niche opportunities that's coming out.
I was reading on your website that even more focused and more specifically, yeah, you have three main areas of interest, yeah, which are artificial intelligence, you have digital logistics as the second one, and as the third one, you have trade finance. Yeah. And I was actually curious why these three. I mean, an obvious buzzword that missing is blockchain, or right, we can throw others, automation or whatever. So why did you pick these three?
Yeah, a lot of buzzwords out there, right? There's blockchain, even IoT, 5G, autonomous. There's a whole
drones,
bunch of drones.
Yeah.
Correct, right. So there's a whole bunch of buzzwords being thrown out there. A lot of those buzzwords are, they can be deemed as, fundamental technologies or platforms to enable certain stuff, right? Would one technology be differentiated than the other and things like that? That's one part of it, right? So we are not that kind of a VC firm where we will go so deep into, like, say, autonomous vehicles and, LIDARs and stuff like that. We might look at it, right? But it enables, it requires a different type of deep tech, perhaps longer term kind of VCs to look at it. Now, for us, we look at it more from a solution clustering perspective, right? And we think about, what are areas that are broad enough categories to be able to, because industry changes, but yet something stay the same, right? So broad enough categories for us to be able to capture some of the stuff that's changing and yet be able to zoom down and focus on some areas that the industry understands as terminologies. That's the first point. The second one is really, you know, how are we, these areas need to be able to support new differentiated technologies and models, right? So, you know, it is not so much of broad general statements, but more specific ones, right? So even if you say things like AI, you know, we will still go at least a few levels lower to say what kind of AI, right? Okay, so I'll talk more about that solution area a bit later. And the third area, the third reason of choosing these spaces is that, you know, it allows us to be able to focus and yet evolve the thinking on a daily basis, right? So AI evolves. Traditionally, you know, in the supply chain logistics world, AI was equivalent to operations research, right? OR, demand forecasting, right? And there are very traditional techniques in those areas, right? But why we actually put AI into this bucket was because we felt that this area was ripe for change with new technologies coming out, right? That's one. And in the digital logistics space, I mean, it's enough said, right? There's a lot of models that's coming out, you know, and these might purely be business models, right? Or it might be technologies that enables business models. Our interest is more in the technologies that enables the business models rather than the business models by itself, right? And the reason is this, right? The core technologies or IP is actually the one that would drive differentiation and sustainability of the business model into the future. Mm. It's not the general business operating model itself, right? General operating models can be copied, but if you have a core IP there that holds everything together, that can't be so readily copied. So that core IP is the one we're really looking for, right? Sometimes the core IP might be in the context of, you know, an enterprise software even, right? That looks at specifically data, either collection of data or even, you know, creation of new data, right? So that in combination with enterprise software is something that we're looking at, right? Things like, you know, core analytics or predictive models around enterprise software, right? And the kind of data that they collect is also another model they're looking at in the digital logistics.
If I am to kind of try to comprehend this in my own lens in a very simplistic example, let's say I have 100 trucks and my competitor has 100 trucks. So, you know, some 10 other competitors can buy 100 trucks. But what you're after is that maybe, as an example, that the software that optimizes the deliveries, optimizes the routes that will basically make that particular trucking company way better than all the rest because they wouldn't have the same software to just as an example, the software.
Okay. Something like that? I would take it a few levels more than that, right? I would take it as not so much optimization because there's a lot of capabilities out there to, a lot of, you know, capabilities to optimize routes, for example. But, you know, if there is some specific IP around where demand is really coming from, right? You know, ability to predict prices along certain lanes, right? Ability to, you know, to predict capacity around certain lanes, right? You know, and then everything else sort of falls in order, right? If you know your demand, you know your capacity, you know, then the optimization happens, yes. Right? The backhaul, you know, optimizing backhaul and the whole capacity utilization, you know, that kind of a thing. And, no, you know, is it, yeah, so that is the core piece that we're looking at, right?
Actually, you mentioned that you're not looking into optimizations. Yeah, I chose the wrong example. Yeah. It's much more clear now. Yeah.
Yes. So we are looking for that secret sauce, mm-hmm. right? Other than a general capability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's on the digital logistics space. Now, of course, trade finance, you know, we feel that trade finance is really an area where, you know, there's some solutions and capabilities that have, I mentioned before, incremental changes, right? Trade finance is potentially an area that, you know, that is ripe for revolutionary change, you know, with its relation to supply chain and logistics, right? And the reason for this is this. With greater visibility of data, right, and the trust in the data that's coming out, right, we envision there'll be new business models and capabilities and financing opportunities around financing for various players in the chain, not only, you know, the chain master and the first tier suppliers, but all through, you know, the second, third tier suppliers and deep tier guys, you know, that were previously underserved, right, by the traditional financing organizations, right? And new business models will start emerging out of trade finance as well. You know, it's not, you know, not only in terms of, you know, as consumers, for example, you know, we are faced with many options, right, when it comes to e-commerce, right? If do you want to buy a product, you know, you order, and sometimes there might be an option of, you know, a long-term payment plan, a one-year, you know, that kind of a thing with a certain interest rate. Why can't that be the same for every other enterprise out there, right? Yes, you know, I'll accept this, and I, you know, and for this particular transaction, you know, I'm willing to get a discounted rate out of it and take the money now, that kind of a thing. And you don't necessarily need to do deep KYC with me previously, right? But the data is available outside everywhere else to ascertain that I'm actually good for that particular order, right? So trade finance, we feel, is going to be, you know, over the next couple of years, it will be a revolutionary change, you know, with regards to supply chain logistics and especially the supply chain logistics data that's coming out. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to actually drill in the first investment that you have done, right, which is in an AI startup called Prowler.io, which is an AI platform for decision making. I think it's called Vuku. And long story short, they make organizations or they help organizations make better decisions in financial markets, in logistics, in ride sharing, smart cities, and robotics. So I think the round was about 24 million, Series B, and you contributed, but also your ecosystem partners contributed to it, which was the Singapore Government Innovation Platform, SG Innovate. I think you had Atlantic Bridge, RB Capital, Tencent Holdings, and some other participated. So maybe tell us how and why did you choose this particular startup, and you know, a little bit the story around it.
Oh wow. I think I'll go back a little bit to operations research, right, and the whole traditional way of industry looking at it. And this was several years back. So several years back, you know, when I was leading that regional technology, supply chain technology firm, you know, I was not convinced that, you know, the traditional ways of, you know, optimization was optimal, mm-hmm. right? In the first place, you know, the ability to do multi-node, multi-tier, you know, optimization was really not there, right? And part of it was, yes, data and stuff, but also part of it was the math and the technologies to be able to do that. The moment you hit, you know, X amount of nodes, or, you know, the sort of solution sort of breaks down, right? So I was actively on the lookout for someone, but, you know, and generally there were some new, I won't say new, but there's new thinking around different models that sort of came up, but wasn't really applied in industry yet. Those are just math models in universities and stuff like that. So that's several years back. So when I was introduced to Prowler, right, early this year, you know, I was quite excited because they showed, you know, that by using their deep AI probabilistic model, you know, with reinforcement learning capabilities, you know, they were able to, with less data, have better results than the traditional methods, right? And they've proven this in POCs with some large clients, you know, that they will give like more than 20% accuracy rate compared to how a traditional optimization and forecasting solution would do, right? So, you know, with that, you know, and that was because the core models are different, right? So with that, you know, we found that I was excited to be able to find them and glad an opportunity to be able to co-invest in this. Because nowadays for very good startups, it's not a case of, you know, them necessarily looking out for investors per se, but more a case of them choosing which investors they will allow, you know, to be part of their ecosystem in their company, right? So it's the other way around, especially for the good ones. Yeah. So we are actually very optimistic that, you know, with their new techniques, it can be quite revolutionary for the industry. And especially now, where especially in the macroeconomic environment, there's so much dynamic stuff happening, right? How do companies react to it and stuff like that? And that's exactly where their models come in, because you might not have data around the new stuff that's happening, right? But you still need a result and you still need to be dynamic. And that's where they come in to help those planning and allocations and pricing decisions.
And I guess a key question that would be on the minds of a lot of our listeners would be, how do you decide which startup to invest? Okay, in this case, we speak specifically about this one, but, and you know, there's tens, hundreds, thousands of startups that you pass on, right? So what's that crux? What's the gist of that? How do you make that decision?
We haven't reached the thousands of startups that we passed on, but I can say it's hundreds.
In 1 year. So.
in 1 year, correct. Exactly, right? I think the number one key criteria is really the investment returns. That's straightforward, right? And that's relatively straightforward to the other two things, right? The second is, you know, it needs to potentially have a capability, be it IP or technology, to potentially be transformative for the industry. So that is a big word. And we spend, in ReefNaut, we spent a lot of time thinking through about business models and how, you know, those solution areas, how is it changing? How is the industry changing within those solution areas that we're focused on? And how certain startups, you know, can potentially, with their capabilities, transform that small little solution area that we're looking at. Right? So transformative is very important for us. Right? And the third area is a bit more, it sort of shows our propensity to be a bit more active in our investments, right? Which is the ability to actively support them to grow, right? So we are not one of those investors, you know, for better or for worse. We're not one of those investors that, you know, we'll just invest, you know, we get part of the company and we'll sit back and relax and let them run. We are not, right? Going back to the vision of us supporting companies and helping them grow and helping the industry to transform, right? We would like to actively support these startups to transform the industry and to grow. So what you see is that, you know, I have other initiatives that might sound ancillary to this, but, you know, bringing ecosystem partners together, you know, thinking about certain spaces within supply chain and logistics, right? All that actually comes together during an investment. So when we invest in a company, generally, you know, like the Prowler example, for example, right? You know, we would expose them to our industry ecosystem partners if it makes sense, if there's value contribution, right? And these ecosystem partners can be shippers, consumer goods companies, you know, or it can be, you know, other investors, you know, or even individuals, right, that might have strong capabilities to support those startups, right? In some cases, it might be a case where, you know, if the startup would like to expand into a region and they need, you know, to have very strong individuals, right, then we would bring our ecosystem partners to help to support them in those growth as well. Yeah.
Mm. In terms of the startups that you see, and in terms of the common mistakes that you see, especially, I mean, I'm guessing again, so hundreds, not guessing, hundreds of people have pitched to you. Do you see certain mistakes that they make in even, maybe it can be business models, it can be the way they structure it, it can be the way they pitch. Yeah. I think that can be relevant also, both for startups as well as for corporates that are listening to this.
Yeah. I think I wouldn't really call it mistakes, right? I'll answer in a different way, right? I'll answer in terms of, you know, what we are looking out for, right? And whether or not we invest or whether or not we like it, you know, this is what we typically are looking out for, right? Number one, to be clear about your proposition and differentiation, right? So some startups, you know, generally, they might be very tech heavy, you know, but really, what is it that your customers are looking for? What kind of problems are you solving? How are you different? How is your technology different from the next guy out there? Or is it the same? And if so, you know, enough said, you know, this is end of story, right? So that's number one, be very clear about the proposition and differentiation. Number two, you know, I think there's a need for startups and maybe even extend to corporates as well to be very self-critical about the defensibility and the strength of your solution and your proposition versus other incumbents and the new competition that's coming out. You know, this area is very, very key, right? It is one of those things where, you know, it's a know yourself type of a thing, and really know yourself, right? And who are your competitors, right? Do you need to change your proposition? Do you need to change your technology or business model or pivot, right? And that is there's a need for something like a sense and respond, right? Which is my third point, right? So, which is always sense and respond and enhance, you know, on a daily basis, right? From your discussions with, you know, if you're a startup, discussions with clients, there's always new learnings coming in. How can you enhance your business model, your technology, your go-to-market based on those individual learnings, right? You know, that's the sense and respond piece, and always enhance, right? So those three pieces, you know, I think if the startups are very clear and, you know, they and clear about their proposition, differentiation, self-critical, and being able to sense and respond and enhance, I think that is something that, you know, is part of what we're looking for, right? Because we might like a startup at that point in time, but we must also be comfortable that 1 year down the road, you know, even with new competition coming, they can still be competitive. Yeah. So those are the kind of three elements that, you know, I propose they look at. Yeah.
What would you say that your vision for ReefKnot is 5 years down the line in terms of, you know, how will ReefKnot and the, I think what is an important piece of this question, and the ReefKnot ecosystem look like in 5 years' time?
Okay. So, and good point that you brought up, the ecosystem as well. In this space, on a global basis, when I say space, means supply chain, logistics, technology, VC firms, there's basically a handful, right? And on a global basis. So basically very, very, very few, right? But we're very focused, right? And for ReefKnot, in 5 years, I would like us to be the very clear global leader, right, in number one, identifying, and number two, catalyzing, you know, the next generation supply chain technology leaders. We will not spread, as in the sense that we don't intend to invest in many companies, but we intend to invest in a few. But the few that we invest in, you know, we are looking for them to be really the sector leaders, the solution leaders, right? So that's very clear. So for us to be globally recognized as a leader in growing and helping and identifying these companies, right? And the ecosystem that you mentioned, right? The vision is that with the ecosystem partners, this whole ReefKnot and the ecosystem will come out as almost like a global leading think tank type of a thing. We think about new areas and solutions and opportunities within supply chain logistics, be it business models, technologies, or whatever have you. We spot them early, you know, and we support these areas of growth, right? So I think that is the kind of vision that I'm looking for ReefKnot and our partners over the next 5 years.
Mm. Moving it to the talent and human resources side, and right. Which is such an important topic in general for companies, but maybe right. Even more so for startups. Yeah. And you've had your own startup, you've led companies. Now you're from an investing perspective, obviously, you have right. To look at companies and how they attract talent. What would you say are some of the key factors when it comes to finding and attracting and retaining top talent in a startup environment?
Yeah. So I think attracting talent to startups now is probably slightly easier than it was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, right? 10 years ago, it was still very much of a, you know, needing stability and that kind of a thing, right? Big corporates provide. Now, you know, startups tend to have a bit more, you know, oh, there's a lot of excitement, there's an opportunity to grow, right? Both personally and potentially from a wealth perspective if you become a unicorn. So, you know, there's certain attractiveness inherently into startups for certain individuals. I think that's, you know, that's the first point. Second point is around problems, right? So challenging part. There's generally, okay, scarce talent everywhere from sales to leaders to whatever, but there's two areas that I feel that are, there's a particular shortage in, right? Data scientists is the obvious one, right? And specifically around data scientists that are familiar with the supply chain logistics problems, right? That's number one. Number two, it's actually good product leaders, right? Product development folks, you know, of leaders that can think around, you know, what is the product or the solution that they are building that's relevant for the market, you know, the differentiation part of it and the pricing part of it, you know, all goes into it, right? But that product piece, I think, is very, very, very key because, you know, and that differentiates, you know, a services firm from a products firm. And that also differentiates a successful, a startup with a good ARR and backlog versus one that is always chasing for the next deal, right? So I think these two are the two key ones that a lot of startups actually, I feel, face challenges hiring, right? And the third area, it's around actually location, because where the talent resides might not necessarily be where the markets are. So the startups will need to be very, you know, careful to manage, you know, their resources, especially since it's a very scarce resource, right? And across, you know, getting the right talents from the right places and addressing the markets that their products best fit. So I think those are those couple of challenging areas that, you know, the startups would tend to face and would need to address.
I'll pick up, all of them are extremely relevant. I'll pick up on the point with the data scientists and and the product leaders, because we are currently in the process of figuring out a few searches exactly for that, and I can attest and confirm it's the most in demand skill sets across. Actually, it would be across anything to do with. I would say data scientists are probably in demand in any industry because pretty much data will drive any industry, anyways. And he's driving at the moment, and for the future. Whereas the product, definitely anything to do with tech, they need a good product. Or good product people, and that product people are so scarce because it's a combination of actually a lot of common sense, and fundamentally it's common sense and ability to put yourself in the shoes of the client and understand, okay, yes, I have this product, but then, you know, I need to constantly refine, adjust to the realities of my customer, and that customer will be different depending on the market. So the more markets, the more, you know, the more customization of the product. And everybody needs them. Everybody wants them. It's like, you know, it's that kind of rare commodity. It's not a commodity. It's a human being after all. But it's incredible.
And this is an area that is not well understood by folks that haven't experienced it before. Right. So I came from, you know, IBM environment, right? It's a very, you know, very product-centric environment. Yes, there's services, but, you know, there's also global product leaders, you know, and there's very clear demarcation and line in terms of what their roles and responsibilities are. So that's one extreme, right? The other extreme, you know, is really startups just building stuff for what their clients are asking for, right? So, you know, as startups grow, they'll need to be able to sense, going back to the sensing of what the customers are asking for, to actually where their vision of where they want to, what they want to build and stuff like that. So, you know, that kind of, I think you mentioned common sense, but it, I think it's way more in common sense, right? You know, there needs to be a very good thinking around, you know, how do you productize? What's the roadmap for it? What's the strategy for it? You know, besides building the stuff. And not a lot of people understand that.
It's an art. It's an art.
It's an art, yes.
I remember when we, so we have this role as a chief product officer, and always in terms of finding the right fit, we tend to ask also the client, you know, how in your past when you hired somebody like this, how did it go, and what was successful? And then the answer that we got was, well, actually, if I am to think in my history, and it was somebody that had been around for a while at the, an executive CEO level, and he's like, in my history, the best that I hired was actually not a product person. It had come from operations, had done a bunch of things, had studied psychology, understood people really well, had done P&L roles, had done a bit of product, but then, you know, all these things together made her an incredibly good and talented product person. So it's really an art on the product side. On the data science side, it's in some ways much more how to say surgical, because you kind of can track people, but the product is a bit more of an art. Interesting sharing. Final question from me: if you were to give an advice to people listening, looking back at your career, looking back at what you've done, what would you say was some of the most successful or useful pieces of advice that you've gotten that have helped you the most?
Yeah, so not so easy to answer. maybe I would, I think it's a combination of a few things, right? But first and foremost, and central to it all, is actually following your passion. So following a passion, it might sound like a generic statement, you know, but I think you need to wrap around a few things around it, right? So number one is just, you know, be real about it, right? You know, can your passion make money? You know, you need to survive, so can it make money, right? You know, how good are you versus the next other guy, right? That kind of a thing, you know, and going back to sense and respond, you know, you have to apply back to your individual self as well, right? Really knowing yourself. And also part of it is to be aware of the individual role, you know, your individual role in the grand scheme of things. And that might change from time to time. So for example, you know, I was fortunate enough I'm passionate in the whole supply chain and technology space. It's a space I've been in for a very long time. And, you know, and because of that passion, I mean, folks that are passionate about this in the industry, we know, right? And we, and you can see it, right? And these folks, you know, constantly read stuff, you know, what's happening on a day-to-day basis. And to think about it on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis, that is not possible without passion, right? So with passion, that becomes a central part of it. But really around it, you know, you need to then think about, okay, where is my place in the world? Can I influence my small little part of it, right? And if given other opportunities, you know, maybe I can influence a bigger part of it. But again, going back, you know, I think central point is, you know, follow your passion, right? And build your capabilities around your passion and build your ecosystem around your passion. And with like-minded people, you know, it would just be a very positive kind of a cycle, and, you know, just get better and better and better. Yeah. Mm.
Mark, thank you so much. Appreciate the time. Good luck in the journey with ReefKnot. I would encourage anybody listening that is interested and curious to look you up, to look up ReefKnot, to pitch Mark maybe on LinkedIn. See, first listen to the podcast carefully, then pitch Mark. And yeah, good luck in all that you want to do at ReefKnot.
Thank you very much, Radu, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcotglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.